Welcome to the Back Issue Banter Podcast. We're your hosts, Brad Page
and Chris Caron. Each episode, we'll look back at some of our favorite issues and storylines, along with the creators behind those books, celebrating what we love about comics.
So grab those trade paperbacks off the bookshelf, rummage through your long boxes, or fire up your digital reader and join us for some Back Issue Banter.
Welcome to Back Issue Banter, the podcast where we discuss comics. I'm Chris Caron.
And I'm Brad Page.
And since Brad picked today's subject, Brad, why don't you tell everybody what we're going to be reviewing today?
Sure. Well, today we're going to be rereading Amazing Spider-Man number 31, 32, and 33. This is a storyline that's often referred to as the Master Planner storyline or arc, but it is essential reading, not just for a Spider-Man fan, but really for any Marvel fan. So I guess without further ado, let's get into it.
Well, you know, the funny thing is I read this and I hadn't read it in a long time, so it was almost brand new to me in a sense, but I remembered bits and pieces of it. This is Lee and Ditko at their absolute peak. I mean, yeah. They're like a well-oiled machine. I mean, you've got basically Ditko, like the second issue, regards him as the sole plotter. But whatever the arrangement was, you know, it's still working. I mean, you've got all these great characters, those iconic images of Spider-Man, you know, lifting that stuff, you know, where he's like, you know, you can tell you can see the strain, like, as he's doing this, but he does it. And, you know, of course, we'll get into this issue by issue, but of course, there's the trademark of Aunt May, you know, being ill again, and, you know, she can't suffer any undue stress or strain or she'll die. In fact, at one point, she's about to die in this, but we'll get into this issue by issue. So what are your overall thoughts on it, Brad, before we get into the issue by issue breakdown?
Well, you know, just you've pretty much nailed it. I mean, it's an iconic Spider-Man story for a number of reasons. It is probably the peak of Ditko's art on Spider-Man. It just, all the elements that make a great Spider-Man story are in here. So let's get into it.
Well, before we do, I do want to make one little confession, but I will clarify my remarks. When I first discovered Spider-Man in the mid-70s, the artist, the current artist on the current Amazing Spider-Man at the time was Ross Andrew. And the reprints in Marvel Tales, which were kind of running at the same time, were later issues by John Romita and Stan Lee. So I didn't – but when I first encountered Ditko, I'm going to make a confession here. I wasn't crazy about his artwork at age 8. Mm-hmm. There was something – it looked weird to me. It looked like Peter Parker looked, you know, like – he looked front like mousy, like this guy couldn't lift a sandwich. And, you know, I thought some of the figures looked strange, and it just didn't take at that age. Now I absolutely adore his artwork. I mean, I can see what he brings to it. I mean, I know Jack Kirby took a stab at, you know, designing Spider-Man, and for whatever reason, it's probably the only time this ever happened where Stan Lee rejected his design or his, what he thought the character would be about. So, you know, the other thing too is like we're really looking. There aren't going to be too many issues after this where Ditko stays on. I mean, he's going to be on for a few more issues, and then by 39, he's out and never to return. I mean, so you're really seeing him at his peak, and he's not going to be around too much longer. So you kind of know that, but boy, this is just storytelling. It's great. So Brad, take it away.
Amazing Spider-Man number 31. If this be my destiny. December 1965. Script by Stan Lee, art by Steve Ditko, lettering by Sam Rosen. Spider-Man tries to stop a group of henchmen from stealing some radioactive atomic devices, but they escape into a hidden underground facility run by someone known only as the Master Planner. It's also Peter Parker's first day at college, where he meets Harry Osborn and Gwen Stacy. But Aunt May collapses and ends up in the hospital with some unknown deadly illness. Yeah, so the storyline begins with Amazing Spider-Man number 31. Stan is credited with script, Ditko with art. This, I believe, back in, it started in issue 25, I think, where Ditko kind of put his foot down and demanded more credit. So he started getting credit for plotting, beginning with issue 25. And of course, you know, there's always, we talked about this on the Stan episode, and I'm sure we'll continue to run into it anytime we talk about this era of comics, is who gets credit for what, right? But it's clear, the one thing that is clear is that the art is all Steve Ditko, and the script, the dialogue, is all Stan. What the things in between there, and there's a lot, you know, in between there, we'll never really know, I don't think, who, how much is credited one way or the other. But the words coming out of the character's mouth, mouths, is Stan. And of course, the artwork is all Ditko. But yeah, this launches this three issue storyline that really, as I said at the upfront, all the elements that make a great Spider-Man story are in here. You not only have the action of Spider-Man, but you've got all of this Peter Parker stuff that's going on, right? It's it's Peter's first day at college.
Yes.
This is the first appearance of both Gwen Stacy and Harry Osborn, who would become key elements of the Spider-Man cast. Even today, you know, Harry is still around, and some version of Gwen is around. That's a long story. But this is the where those two characters first appear. Plus, you've got the holdover characters like Flash Thompson and Betty Brant. They're all in here. J. Jonah Jameson. So you've got the extended cast. Of course, you have Aunt May gets sick.
Yep.
And is on death's door, is in the hospital, like every great Spider-Man story.
Yeah.
Peter, you know, he can't pay the bills, right? There's a whole thing. I mean, that's just another element of classic Peter Parker, down on his luck. I think it's very interesting that in the middle of this story, you've got almost seven pages where Spider-Man doesn't appear. It's all Peter Parker's trials and tribulations with, you know, going to college and meeting these new characters and all of that. That's a fairly large page count in a book like this to, you know, not show your hero doing any fighting or swinging between buildings or any of that. But that just goes to show you like how much the backstory, the characters, the personality, you know, those things were all part of these books, and that's what drew the readers in as much as the slam bang action, right?
I mean, these were essentially soap operas for adolescents, for male adolescents primarily.
Yes.
You can say what you want, but let's face it, you know, these ongoing things like Aunt May's illnesses, later on Peter's romance. I mean, I think Peter had already dated Betty, or he was still dating Betty Brant at this point.
Yeah, this is kind of this arc is sort of the end of that relationship and the very beginnings of his thing with Gwen. But yeah, but yes, it's all you know, those relationship dramas, the soap opera elements are a big part of this story and of this issue in particular. But you know, it's a lot of classic Ditko art. And you know what, Chris, I'm with you. I was not a huge fan of Ditko, you know, at the time. I've come to appreciate it a lot. There's things that he does that are just quirky, unique Ditko.
Well, like for example, like if you see John Romita or any of the other, or even Ross Andrew drawing like Mary Jane or Gwen, they look prettier, sexier. Peter has more. Peter's more handsome. He's more muscular. He looks frail. Ditko, you know, Ditko draws him as this frail, skinny teenager who looks like he's going to keel over. And you know, there are times when he gets sick where he's just he can barely keep it together. But you learn over time as I got older and I could appreciate like the, you know, like you say, the quirkiness. I like it now. I mean, I enjoy it now and I don't have any problems with it. But when I was a kid, he just did not, it didn't look very superheroic compared to other Marvel artists or even other DC artists for that matter. I've never seen anyone quite like Ditko in terms of his, you know, especially if you like, especially if you look at something like Doctor Strange, where he goes even weirder with it.
Right, right. Well, I always, in general, I always liked his Spider-Man, but his Peter Parker and particularly the characters around them always seem kind of awkward to me. I mean, that, you know, it, as you said, I think one of the, I don't know if you want to call it a weakness, but sort of one of the Ditko just really didn't draw beautiful women.
No.
You know,
no,
they're all, even when he was trying to draw beautiful women, they just, they're not, they don't really look that beautiful. You know, and that same with the men, right? The men are not really all that handsome. Peter Parker was always kind of dorky looking, but even like, you know, Flash Thompson and the, you know, the big jocks and stuff, all of them kind of look goofy.
Yeah.
But, you know, but when he's drawing Spider-Man, that works in his favor. I think the weird angles he would twist Spidey's body like a spider. No one else could really. And that set the template up through Todd McFarlane and beyond of being able to just draw Spidey in these kind of almost inhuman position of his limbs and things like that. But it works so well for Spider-Man. But that's all Ditko. That begins with it. With Ditko.
Well, you know, it's funny, when Ditko left, John Romita took over the book. And I guess from what I read, his directive was to try and draw it kind of like Ditko. And he does, you can kind of see in the first couple of issues that he does where he's trying, but even so, he still cannot replicate Ditko's quirkiness or his that unique style, like you said, where he drew him like a spider and all these weird contortions. And yet it doesn't look contrived. It looks natural.
Right. It works. It works for Spider-Man.
And this issue is no exception.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, this launches that story kind of sets us up for the next two issues. So let's go ahead. Let's move ahead to the next issue. Amazing Spider-Man number 32, Man on a Rampage, January 1966. Script by Stan Lee. Plot and illustration by Steve Ditko. Lettering by Artie Simek. We learn that Aunt May's illness is caused by radioactive particles in her blood as a result of a blood transfusion that Peter Parker had given her previously. Racked with guilt, Peter works with Dr. Connors, formerly the villain known as the Lizard, to find a cure. The only hope is to get their hands on a rare serum. However, the master planner, who is revealed to be none other than Dr. Octopus, steals the serum for his own use, sending Spider-Man on a frantic search to find it. He discovers the underground hideout and battles Doc Ock when the building collapses on Spider-Man, trapping him beneath tons of steel and rubble. So Amazing Spider-Man 32, Man on a Rampage. This is Dr. Octopus appears. He's revealed to be the master planner. I'm not sure I ever really understood why they just didn't make it Dr. Octopus from the beginning. They had to call him master planner, and it just turns out to be just Dr. Octopus.
They always seem to have this thing about mysterious villains from behind the scenes, and we don't know who they are. I mean, they would do this very soon with the Green Goblin.
Yeah.
You know, we would eventually, of course, find out in issue 39 who he really is. Spoiler alert, it's Norman Osborn. But yeah, I mean, for the first, you're kind of, but you have to admit, though, I hear what you're saying, Brad. They probably should have just said, made this a Doc Ock story from day one.
It doesn't hurt the story, but it's just an odd, you know, kind of twist.
But then all of a sudden, you see a mysterious, like, shape, and then all of a sudden you see the arms, and it's like, Doc Ock, you know, Otto Octavius, the doc, you know, of the master planner. They always had to have these very dynamic panels where the reveal was, you know, had. And this is not the first time, probably not this, and it won't be the only time where we're going to see a dramatic reveal of a mysterious behind the scenes villain.
No, it was kind of a shtick, particularly in the Ditko period. Just so sort of interesting. Of course, you have Aunt May is on her deathbed in the hospital. She's been poisoned by radioactive particles in her blood because in a previous issue, go back 3 or 4 issues, she was on death's door yet again, and Peter Parker had to give her a blood transfusion. And of course, because he's got this radioactive spider venom blood, whatever, that he transferred some of that to Aunt May, and that makes her sick. So then, of course, not only is she sick, but he's riddled with guilt because it's his fault that she's on her deathbed.
How come when he has radioactive spider blood, he becomes a superhero?
Right.
She's about to die. I mean, it seems kind of like selective, really. Like, maybe because she's old, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know.
Maybe because she's 87.
Marvel science.
Right. But yeah. Well, Stan Lee was the first person to, you know, he admitted in an interview, I don't know anything about science. You know, that's why everything was always gamma radiation or cosmic. You know, I called them cosmic rays. You know, he was first to admit like the science was, you know, this is back before, you know, realism in comics or pseudo realism where, you know, someone might either know something about science or they might consult someone who knew something about science. But, you know, anyway, no, it's so she's dying as it seems to be every 5 to 10 issues. You know.
Yeah. And so he goes to see Dr. Connors, who was the villain, the lizard, who had turned himself into a lizard man. Now at this point, he's kind of a good guy. But that's where that character comes from. And so Dr. Connors tells him that there's this mysterious, or not really mysterious, but there's this rare formula, 150-36. That's the only thing that's going to cure Aunt May.
Of course.
There's a great scene on page 7 of the Dr. Connors and Spider-Man doing some lab work with some classic Ditko test tubes and that kind of stuff. I just, you know, Ditko was great at drawing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And of course, it turns out whatever Dr. Octopus is up to, he also needs that formula 150-36. So he steals it before Spidey can get to it. And that sets up the conflict for this particular issue. At the end of the issue, you know, the Spider-Man finds Dr. Octopus's undersea, underwater lair, and they fight in the place. Collapses. Spidey's trapped under this stuff. Page 19, there's just sort of the great shot of Spidey under all of this heavy machinery and rubble, and he's looking out and he can see there's a crack or something in the ceiling and the water starts dripping through. So not only is he trapped under this stuff, but this place is about to get flooded because of course it's under the sea, and that sets us up for the big scene in the concluding issue of this storyline. But it's that just great storytelling by Ditko there, well, the way he shows Spidey under all this machinery and then suddenly the drips of water that he can see. And that sets us up for even more great Ditko art moving forward. But this story is moving along at a rapid pace. Still at this time, there weren't a lot of these continuing storylines. This is really something that Marvel really developed, if maybe pioneered. Not that it didn't exist before, but the general attitude was that you never knew if you were going to be able to get the next issue, right? Because people, there weren't really subscriptions. There weren't comic book stores. You got them off the newsstand. So if you're a kid, right, you go to the newsstand and you know, here's Spider-Man 31 and you pick it up. But maybe the next month when you go, they might not have it. It might be sold out. You might have missed it. The newsstand might not even have gotten it because distribution was so sketchy back then.
We both know from the, you know, buying books in the 70s that the perils of, you know, collecting at the newsstand. But I want to go back a little bit to one, you know, when you were talking about when he's trapped underneath the machinery and it's going drip, drip. If this were an episode of Batman 66, this would be the point where the narrator would start going, "Will drip, drip, drip. Will Spider-Man, you know, emerge from this?"
Yeah.
Tune in, you know, it's, you can almost like, it almost plays like that. Like you could see Batman and Robin in a similar situation where they're pinned beneath this stuff and the place is going to flood with water and they're going to die. And, you know, and it's like you said, the story is moving along at a brisk pace. There's no, there isn't any one point in these three issues where I'm going, but this is dragging. There's no decompressed storytelling like they have now where they stretch everything out. Like this could have been a 6-issue storyline if it were done today, because everything's
exactly.
Be-
yeah. And comics these days too have a smaller page count. So you have less pages per issue and they have done, as you said, this kind of decompressed storytelling now where they
arbitrarily determine a length.
They stretch things out.
It's got to be for a trade. They've got to have enough episodes to go into a trade. They need these to be self, you know, contained stories that, you know, go into, although I read a Batman one from the New 52 where it not only didn't end, it just said, you know, to be continued. And I kind of felt like, well, you know, and I didn't feel a storyline was that compelling. But yeah, this is, once again, like I said before, this is Lee and Ditko at their absolute peak of their powers. They are, their collaboration is like, you know, it just works. I mean, obviously Lee, you know, and Kirby were doing Fantastic Four and some of the other books. Ditko, I don't know what, if he was doing anything else at this time, but
Doctor Strange.
Yeah. Okay. Doctor Strange, you know, which that might be worth looking into at some point as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, this storyline just moves along. You've also got the guy who's working for Jameson, who was going to try and look into the, kind of like, I guess it's like the mob. It's kind of like supposed to be like, you know, a sort of like, you know, comic book version of the mob. You know, yeah, they're the really gangs, sort of the mafia, the or
criminal
like
gangs.
That. But yeah, they're definitely gangs. I mean, obviously, you know, someone like Doc Ock has got to have, you know, he's got to have henchmen to carry out his master schemes, you know, because he's the master planner. But yeah, it was kind of, you know, they always had to have these superlative names like the master planner. You know, it always it sounds more dramatic, I guess, you know, to say the Master Planner saga or whatever. But yeah, this is just like, this is just everything's turned up to 11 as far as comic books go in this so far.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it wraps up in the next issue. So let's move forward to that one. Amazing Spider-Man number 33, the final chapter. From February 1966. Script by Stan Lee. Plot and illustration by Steve Ditko. Lettering by Artie Simek. Spider-Man, buried under tons of wreckage, must free himself and recover the serum before he's crushed or drowned. Against all odds, he struggles free, fights his way through a gang of Dr. Octopus's men, and staggers back to Dr. Connors with the serum in hand. Aunt May is saved, but Peter Parker's relationship with Betty Brant comes to an end. So Amazing Spider-Man 33, the final chapter. This wraps up this storyline with one of the most iconic sequences in any comic book ever. It was sort of duplicated in the Spider-Man, the first Tom Holland movie.
Yeah.
But to me, it's never been topped as it's presented in this book. And it happens early in the story. You know, we wrapped up the previous issue. Didn't really wrap it up. We left it on a cliffhanger where you've got Spidey trapped under all this machinery and the room is beginning to fill with water. He can't move it. He's trapped. He's feeling defeated. And just I want to spend a minute talking about the layout of these pages, because this is just Ditko at his absolute. I don't think he ever did anything better than this. And we'll post these in the Facebook group. So If you haven't read these issues, if you just want to go see it, we'll post these pages there because it really is a masterclass in storytelling. And starting on page two, you've got Spidey. He's trapped under all this machinery, struggling to get out. It's kind of it's not exactly a 9-panel grid. The bottom panel is one long, skinny panel, but for the most part, the panels they're tight and kind of claustrophobic. And so you feel like you're trapped in there with Spidey.
Yes.
on these panels.
Yes.
And he's struggling and he can't move. He's weak. He's exhausted. You know, the water is slowly pouring in. And, you know, he starts to think about, of course, Aunt May and Uncle Ben and his guilt and his responsibilities and all of that. On page three, it expands to be a 6-panel grid. And the top two panels are rectangular, longer than they are tall. The pages in the middle, the two panels in the middle are essentially square. And the two panels at the bottom are rectangular where they're taller than they are wide. So it's like as he's lifting up the machinery, the panels are actually going up with him, right? So as he's freeing himself, the panels become less and less restricted. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yes. Right?
And then on page four, you've got 4 panels on that page, 3 smaller panels at the top and 1 larger square panel that takes up 2/3 of the page, where he's finally got some leverage and he's just about to throw that machinery off. So again, as he gets further and further along to moving from underneath all of this rubble, the panels expand and get bigger until you finally get to page 5, where it's a splash page, right? 1 panel on the whole page, and it's him freeing himself. He literally says, "I did it, I'm free," and he throws the. But just the way the structure of those pages from going from these very tight, smaller panels over these few pages to the final page, where it's just one big panel of him free. It's, you know, the artwork is so great at not only telling the story and drawing it, but it gives you that sense of from being trapped to being free.
Yeah.
I'm not doing anywhere near the justice in explaining.
No, you're doing fine.
How great this layout is, but it is one of just the, you know, 4 or 5 greatest panel sequences in the history of comics. It's been imitated and used as inspiration by artists ever since. I think it's Steve Ditko's finest moment. It's a great moment in Spider-Man history. Just it kind of encapsulates that whole thing of, you know, at your lowest moment, never give up, never give in, believe in yourself. You know, it's just a great, great moment. You know, the story goes on from there, but that's really the peak of this whole story.
Oh, yeah. You know, you said it really correct. I mean, he really conveys the struggle. You feel like Peter Parker. You can sense that he's hopeless. He's feeling like, I can't do this. I don't have the strength. I'm tired. I'm just burned out. I can't do this. But yet somehow something inside of him compels him to try. And of course, but when he does that great splash page where he's finally lifting it and he's emerging triumphant. I mean, you're right. It is the peak of the storyline. I mean, you know, obviously it'll get resolved, but you know, you just can't top that. It's so visceral. It you can't look at that and not be awed by it. Like you said, it's a masterclass in storytelling. I mean, that's the one thing. Stan was very lucky that he had artists like Ditko and Kirby who didn't need like a full script and didn't have to have everything laid out for them. Like, okay, panel 1, page 2, splat, you know, he didn't have to give them a lot of direction. He could just basically give them, the bare bones of a plot. In this case, it's Ditko. Ditko is plotting this. Now, I don't know if Stan sees the plot before. I would imagine you have to at least approve it. But he's not really going to get to do anything with it until it comes back, until the finished pencils come back. And right. That's when he's going to put in the dialogue. And, you know, I often have to wonder, like, if Stan, like, just was like, what the hell do I put here? You know, especially if you don't have, if you didn't formulate the story elements. But yeah, this is, like I said, once again, I'll say it again. This is Lee and Ditko at their absolute peak of their powers. It's like a new era because you get Peter Parker going to college. And they, of course, is as sick as ever. That's an evergreen. Yeah. But
you know, and of course, you know, he gets the formula. He saves her. She'll go on to be sick, man.
Oh my god!
Door for many years to come.
But she's still going, folks.
Yep.
As far as I know, she's still. They haven't killed her off yet. There's been a couple of times where it almost looked like they did, or they were going to. But they, you know, she's and you can't. You can kill off Gwen Stacy. You can kill off Norman Osborn. Although they'll all come back at some point because of retconning. But yeah, these three issues are just. I would recommend them to anybody. You don't even have to be a Spider-Man fan to appreciate the great storytelling.
No, I think it really encapsulates who Spider-Man is. It, like I said before, it has all the elements that make up a great Spider-Man story. It has the introduction of some key characters like Gwen and Harry, as we mentioned. It's a key moment in Peter Parker's development because it's him going to college. It has this incredible scene that is, like we said, it's probably Ditko's finest. For me, it's Ditko's finest moment as an artist.
Yeah.
Stan had nothing to do with that. That was all Ditko.
Yes.
Stan has said many times in interviews and whatnot that when he got these pages back, he was blown away by how great a job Ditko did.
I can't imagine what it must have been like when those pages came back to them. I mean, I have to imagine there were probably more than Stan who would want to see stuff like that. You know, like, hey, Ditko just turned in his issue. I'm sure like Remeter and maybe even Jack Kirby were looking at them and going, you know, hey, that's pretty good.
You know? Yeah. 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 So, you know, it's just it's a great story.
Yeah, to say the least.
I think around 2000, 2001, Marvel had a readers poll, asked all their readers to vote for their favorite stories.
Yeah.
And so they had their, you know, Marvel's 100 greatest stories or issues. And this came in at number 15, which is no small shakes.
No.
Frankly, I'm surprised it wasn't a little bit higher.
Yeah, it probably should have been higher.
But, you know, still, I mean, out of all the stories that Marvel has done over, you know, decades.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this one continues to be rated very highly. And you know, if you really want to understand who Spider-Man is, who Peter Parker is, there's really no better place to start than this three-issue run.
I concur. And I don't have really anything else to say about that, Brad. I think we've covered everything here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a classic. and so I thought, you know, what better way to for my first choice to kind of begin at this place in a really every comic fan, whether you're a Spider-Man fan or not, you should read this because it's vintage classic comics.
Absolutely. And what we're going to do, Brad and I were talking about this. We're going to tell you at the end of the episode what the next episode will be about. So you'll have a month to read up, seek out the back issues, or just go into your own archives. I probably should have told you this before we start recording, Brad, but you'll have time to read this. I've decided on the first four issues of Mr. Miracle, Jack Kirby's Fourth World, one of his Fourth World comics, because I think that's a era that's really ripe for exploration. I mean, anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, do we need a reason to talk about Jack Kirby on this show?
I mean, I'm wearing a Jack Kirby t-shirt at the moment.
Yep.
Jack is, you know, as unique and as much as key as Stan was in comics, Jack is as important in the history of comics, going just beyond Marvel, because his career started very early, pre-Marvel. Yeah. And of course, this is a series that we're going to talk about that he wrote for DC.
Yes, this is very significant. Yeah.
There's really no character, no individual bigger in comics than Jack Kirby. You know, Stan, way more famous.
Right.
But in terms of a significant creator in comics history, yes. Jack is untouchable.
And we will talk about that on the next episode of Back Issue Banter. For Back Issue Banter, I'm Chris Karam.
And I'm Brad Page.
And we'll see you next time.
Thanks, everyone.
Mr. K's Super Show. If you love the music of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, join me every month when I and a guest co-host discuss music and music-related pop culture. No stone goes unturned, no bit of trivia is too trivial as we discuss the great music of Generation X, hosted by Chris Carra. Mr. K's Super Show can be found on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are hosted. Check it out. You may not regret it.
Hey, this is Brad Page from the I'm in Love with That Song podcast, inviting you to join me as we explore a different song each episode, discovering what makes these songs great. The performances, arrangements, and the production tricks and techniques are all part of creating those magic moments that turn a good song into a great one. On this podcast, we take a deep dive into each song, listening to all those nuances that came together to make it a great song. Our journey takes us across the musical map, from the Beatles and the Stones to Aretha Franklin and Tom Petty, from Aerosmith to the Zombies. We listen to it all on the I'm in Love with That Song podcast.
Thank you for listening to Back Issue Banter. If you like what you heard, please post a review on Apple Podcasts and please share on social media. On behalf of Brad Page and myself, Chris Karam, thanks once again for listening to Back Issue Banter.